بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين بارئ الخلائق أجمعين صلى الله على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب إله العالمين بالقاسم محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا اللهم صل على محمد. قال الله الحكيم في كتابه الكريم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ومن آياته أن خلق لكم من أنفسكم أزواجا لتسكنوا إليها وجعل بينكم مودة ورحمة صدق الله العلي العظيم. صلوات الله صلوات I would like to speak about marriage today, and I was reminded on our way that today is also a day of the Battle of Badr. So there is some connection between the Battle of Badr and marriage issues. Sometimes marriages turn into battles. So we want to just to start on a light note. Alaykum salam. People live together in all cultures, everywhere in the world. But the sanctity of marriage is because of following a certain example of marriage and performing marriage in a certain way, with a certain nikah and, you know, understanding of certain roles, responsibilities and all of that. So not every marriage is considered an Islamic marriage. Islamic marriage is based on what is in human fitrat and based on the goals behind our creation, why we have been created, and through marriage we need to accomplish those goals. And we have to understand it in the light of Islamic literature. On the other hand, there are many issues related to the psychology of marriage and the psychology of the husband and wife involved in marriage, which plays a very immediate and very significant role in the well-being of a marriage, and also in terms of how they deal with conflicts and problems in marriage. The ayat of Holy Quran that I recited in the beginning, وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ أَنْ خَلَقَ لَكُمْ, the translation I'll read for you, and among his signs is that he created for you from your own selves mates, so that you dwell in tranquility with them, creating love and compassion between you. Indeed, there are signs in this for people who reflect. So Allah created from ourselves, our same, from our kind, He created for us mates, we spouses. So if we live in litaskunu ilayha, we live together in harmony and in tranquility. وَجَعَلَ بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً, and He created between husband and wife by virtue of this Islamic marriage and Aqdul Nikah, because by virtue of following the principles set by Allah and Islam, He created what? جَعَلَ بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً, compassion and mercy. مَوَدَّة is love, and rahmat is compassion, mercy. Love and compassion, love and mercy. So these are two pillars in marriage. That if a person marries with the Islamic principles in mind, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala creates this by virtue of the nikah that they do together, these things. And these are signs for people who reflect. It's easy to say all this, But when it comes to the real issues in marriage and living together, two people who never knew each other, or to some extent knew each other, they got to know each other sometime before marriage and now they want to get married. Each person grew up in a certain culture. Every family has a culture. Not just every city or every country. Every family has a culture. And a lot of other things that they bring to this marriage. Lack of appreciation and recognition, lack of realization of these things leads to a lot of problems. We should first know that what this ayat of Holy Quran mentions is essentially the love. Mawadda. Mawadda comes first. Islam as a religion emphasizes on love very much. For example, this tradition from Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli, where he says, Hal al-deenu illa al-hubb. What is deen except love? And everything in Islam is based on love. You know, people do things for the love of Allah. In Surah Insan, what is narrated about Ahlul Bayt, إِنَّمَا نُطْعِمُكُمْ لِوَجْهِ اللَّهِ. We feed you for the sake of Allah. For the love of Allah, they were feeding the, you know, miskinan wa yateeman wa asira. And love, therefore, is a primary thing in Islam. For example, this person, as narrated in some riwayat, that a person came to see the Holy Prophet. It was daytime, it was very hot weather, and the Prophet of Islam was sitting in the masjid alone. This happened to be. He came in and he saw the Prophet and he sat down, says salam and sat down. The Holy Prophet asked him, Ma ja'abik, what brings you here? So the person said, Hubbuka ya Rasulullah. He said, your love brought me here. I didn't come here for business. Alaykum salam. So the Holy Prophet said, Hal al-deenu illa al-hubb, wa mad deenu illa al-hubb. One of these two. Similar in the meaning, in the sense that he said that what is deen except love? Love is the engine. Love is the engine behind everything. It is what drives a person to do things, right? Generally in life, and also in religion also, when you are passionate about something, that passion drives you to do something for Islam, for Allah, for the society, for yourself. All of this is because how much love you have in your heart, that much you will achieve in life. Naturally, love needs ma'rifat, to know, so that this engine that is in yourself, this passion that you, it doesn't drive you to do something wrong, because you have to maintain adalat and you have to understand things also, not just have the passion to do things. That there are people who have a lot of passion but don't have any insight. So because of their emotions, they just want to do something but they don't know what to do. So ilm and basirat is needed also. Similarly, in marriage also, love is not enough. You have to have understanding, knowing the person you are marrying. On the whole, the younger a person is at the time of marriage, the better. Because it just allows you, because of the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala set up everything. The compatibility is acquired. Partly is there, people should marry, people, you know, men and women should marry each other if they find compatibility in terms of religion, in terms of education, in terms of social whatever, in terms of their personalities. All of these have to be seen. But all of that cannot come in an ideal way. For example, for a person to find an ideal person, it's either not possible or just too hard to get. So what you see is that you try to seek out people who are more compatible to you, someone who is compatible, most compatible for you. But then, as time went on, this compatibility, you have to build on this and create more compatibility. You have to get, you know, understand each other more, so that those remaining areas are also covered. You can't say, okay, 20% compatibility is enough. You have to know more about each other. There is also emphasis in Islam in when you get married, initially, the period initially you spend together, that should be spent in knowing each other. In many cultures, you know, they don't really understand. Men and women don't invest any time or energy in knowing each other. There's too much distraction. You know, travel and this and that, and just like instead of allowing some time to know each other, they're getting distracted with trying to please other people. You know, showing off, traveling, parties, this and that, you know. All of that just takes away that opportunity, that valuable opportunity. When there's so much love for each other, that is the best time to know each other better. Not when there is conflict and problems, because that's a difficult time to understand each other. The best time to know each other is when you are at the best, emotionally at the best possible state, which is right when you get married. You need to spend time to know each other. There's little time, this topic is very, very broad, and I'll probably try to speak about it more tomorrow or day after, and, you know, explore some more. And a lot of work has been done on this issue. On many years I've been doing workshops in Muslim Congress, conference and other places. But to start our discussion, we should know that our emotional needs are different. You know, emotional needs that people have are different. And not just husband and wife, I'm talking in general, you know. For example, on a typical day you get out, you go to some place to buy grocery or something else, right? The sales clerk you are talking to. What's your emotional need from this person? Do you have an emotional need or you don't have any emotional need from this person? Can anyone answer me? Like, what is the minimum, bare minimum emotional need that you may have from a sales clerk? Right? That you expect to be respected, right? He'll talk to you respectfully. So even a person you never saw before in your life, you still have some emotional need from that person. But that emotional need, as it's the lowest. Really, you don't expect a lot from that person. Now, what about someone you have spent some time with? Someone in your classroom. For example, you missed your class in college or school. Now you seek some help, you want some help. What did you do yesterday, for example, when I was absent? What's your emotional need?
Your notes.
Yeah, share something with you. We'll be able to offer some help. Right? So as people are more closer, there's more, you know, history behind it, there's more bonding, there's more knowledge about each other, the emotional needs get more intense. Right? That's why in a situation, like for example, if you're from your brother or sister, how is your emotional need from brother or sister? You expect a lot from your brother or sister. Keep going, parents, I don't know, all the way up to marriage. In marriage, the emotional needs are at the highest. They are at the highest. That's why it is so hard to manage these expectations. Because something can come in the way, can hinder. And then you have to start from the lower stage again. Like for example, the kind of attention you need, you make what they call, you know, bids for attention. You do, for example, you say, so someone you don't know very well, say, Assalamu alaikum, say, Wa alaikum salam. That's the end of it. Maybe that person says, Wa alaikum salam, how are you doing, how is your day? Then you get more encouraged to speak, say more, right? Yes, so where are you from? Your answer is more. There's more communication. It grows. Now, if a brother and sister have been living alone for a long time and they call each other, in a manner that no one is really investing any energy in this communication. How are you? Good. And how are you? Not bad. What's going on? Short answer, you know. Working, you know. The other person says, and what about you? Yeah, studying. This seems like this kind of communication, right, is going to go nowhere. They are just waiting for the first opportunity to hang up the phone, put down the phone, right? That's it. Thank you for calling. Bye. Khuda Hafiz or whatever. Because no one is really putting any energy into this communication. So they will not achieve anything from it either. They will not be, for example, building their relationship any further because they are not investing at all. They're not investing in this relationship. They just, now if one of them showed a little bit more interest, just like for example that sales clerk, right? Says, how are you? Are you having a good day? Can I help you in any way? That's the encouragement. You want to say something more. You go up all the way to marriage where the needs are so intense, but they're not spoken. Very often not spoken. Why is not spoken? Maybe something has gone wrong. Could possibly. So you have to build it. What they say is that you must invest emotionally, put energy in, you know, what they call peace time. Not that there is a problem in marriage. In regular everyday life, you need to, both husband and wife need to invest in this relationship. Care about each other, show attention, you know, someone is speaking, listen, right? If someone is not listening, then that's another issue. Why? Something must have happened. That's another issue to be resolved. But normal times, people need to, it's like an emotional bank account. Keep depositing more money into that account. That you will cash that money when there is a problem. If people have got something in their emotional bank account, when some problem occurs, for example, loss of job, right? Sickness, or some issue with children, some major issue, you know, or anything like that. For example, the boy wants to marry somebody. Now, marry, I'm saying, you know, to make it too simple. I mean, getting involved with someone is a major challenge for the family. All of these things. Instead, if husband and wife had that money sitting there, emotional money in the account, they can use it now. They can, you know, they can ride this storm, through this storm. If they haven't been really too close to each other because like they've not shown too much interest in the other person, knowing where this person comes from, what kind of family that was, what are the dreams in this person's mind, what does she or he want to become in future, and what does she expect from me to help her fulfill that dream, right? If nobody cares about these things, it's just living together, you know, like a business, like a company, like two partners in a business or something. How much do they need to know each other? Just enough to work together, do business. Maybe they never exchange any notes about their personal, you know, dreams. No, but here the needs are so intense that there is a need requirement that people must know each other very well. Otherwise, they cannot live together happily. They may work together as partners. Yes? Like some marriages have become more like business relationships. They are not marriages. They make good money together, but their hearts are somewhere else. They are not in the marriage. They are everywhere else except the marriage. Because they never knew each other, never cared about each other. Some people don't really, are not smart. This is called emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence, when you can sense something is wrong, when you can sense that someone is happy, when you can sense, you know, someone is trying to say something, when you sense, for example, something is bothering this person, and you, depending on your emotional history, you feel comfortable talking about those things, and that is not so common. In many families, these things are suppressed, these things are discouraged. Speaking about fear, for example. You have to be strong, you can't be afraid. Or like someone is sad, that's the last thing a person would talk about. If someone is sad in a family, that's the last thing you would speak about in a family. People generally are dismissing, you know. It's okay, it's going to be alright, you know. Or if a child comes crying, you know, or says very angry about teacher or somebody in school, you say, you must, instead of really understanding what the thing is and really understanding the emotional side of this whole thing, a lot of people, what they do is, you must have done something wrong. Or like in the opposite extreme, oh, that teacher is so-and-so. That's not the issue. It's not about that person who you had a problem with. You start concentrating on that third person. Neither, you should just, for example, start blaming the person who is communicating. Why did it happen? Your emotional history. How comfortable we are talking about these issues depends on where we come from. In our families, do people feel comfortable talking about such emotions or not? There are generally three kinds of people. One is three kinds of families in terms of emotional communication. There are families where they are completely dismissing. Dismiss. Oh, don't talk about this. You know, let us enjoy. Let us relax. So this is not the time for someone angry, upset. Shouldn't be talking about it. Sometimes anger comes easily. Because anger is a hard emotion, as they call it. Because sadness is a soft emotion. It's harder to express. Anger comes very easily. Because it's easily expressed. It doesn't make you feel vulnerable. Anger means you feel like you are in control or something. But expressing sadness, grief, guilt, these are softer emotions, are very hard to express. It requires some level of trust. You will not have that trust with the salesperson. You might have that trust with a close friend. Now if that close friend happens to your husband or wife, then you will express it. If not, then it will keep on piling up. These softer emotions come out in the form of hard emotions like anger, because they haven't been spoken. They haven't been heard, they haven't exchanged what they didn't have the communication that they should have had. Instead they had a communication, they had a discussion about things that they shouldn't have had. They were having an angry communication, but the need was to have a communication about the grief or the hurt or whatever it was, right? The result of this, of course, is that, you know, we need to know that if the emotional history of the families is not clear, people have not invested in the emotional, you know, bank account, they have not invested for the day when they will need it. There are, for example, shortcomings in both husband and wife. If they have a good bonding together, they have cared enough about each other, then, you know, these shortcomings or the problems that happen are dealt with in a, you know, humorous way, or think in a way that, you know, doesn't damage another person, does not hurt another person. But if this, they are not so close, then little issue would become a serious, major issue. You didn't listen to me. Who do you think you are? You know, that's, instead of saying, oh, you didn't listen to me again. Okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow. But why is it that way? It's because of the history they come from, and also because how much they have known each other and how much they have invested in this emotional part of marriage, which is the vital, the most serious, most important pillar of marriage is love. And that is like a tree that you are watering every day. Or if you don't, it dries up really. It dries up. If you want this tree to remain fresh, you must invest in it. Husband and wife both have to. One thing, because there's just too much to discuss, and probably in a discussion I'll expand it a little bit more. There is a difference in the physiology of men and women. Are there any doctors here right now? Physicians? Nurse practitioners? You are? Okay. Male hormones and female hormones are different. And like adrenaline is in men, and it takes over, you know, when in time of any crisis, any sudden, you know, threat, or even something that sounds like a threat, these hormones, these rush hormones, is going to the bloodstream, and the person, the response is what is called flight and fight and flight response. either you fight back or you run away. Flight or fight response. Fight or flight response, right? So you see some men, when their wife is pursuing them, they just withdraw and run away. They say, okay, thank you, I'll see you in an hour. Bye. Because the man cannot deal with this rush, you know, the rush of emotion. He gets flooded. And the wife doesn't understand sometimes. She says, oh, he doesn't care about me. Doesn't see, if there was a pulse recorder on his hand, she could see, you know, what's going on right now. But she doesn't notice that. She's just trying to, you know. And so, female hormones are different. Hormones, they calm her, soothe her internally. But men are different because men are supposed to be, you know, more aggressive. So role in life and society is different. They're supposed to be leaders. They're supposed to, you know, fight wars. They're supposed to engage in, you know, in issues, social and political issues, and basically work and feed the family and protect and all of that. Nature, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has built men like that. Women, they have to cater for the, take care of families, keep the families together, children and everything else, right? They have to be more calm and composed. They have to be more, you know, their sabr is more patience in them. So they don't understand when they are pursuing, no, tell me, why don't you come home on time? Well, you are always late. They are probably just trying to fix a problem. It's just trying to figure out what's happening. But for the guy, it may be one of those three responses. One response is run away. If this continues, the guy just wants to escape. Right? Like a tiger is attacking. It's like the you know, the emotional side of it. The other is fight back. Argue. Who are you? Where are you from? That is the fight back. The third is withdraw. Stonewalling, in fact. Like, for example, hold up a newspaper. Oh yeah, nice news, you know, he's talking about... Like, change the subject as if nothing happened. As if she's not even there. Blocking your vision so that you don't even confront that problem. Why is that? Now, this is natural. Most women, they pursue because they want to know something. It's some problem they want to solve right there. Now, that's not as men view this. So, there is some physiology involved. There is psychology involved in terms of their emotional history. Right? All of that is involved. And therefore, we should, by knowing this much about the general physiology of men and women, right? There's naturally husband and wife would behave differently. Wife would not push that, whatever that subject is, whatever that thing is, topic, they would not push it. They would leave it for another day. So, okay, we'll talk about it tomorrow. When you see that, for example, is not ready for it, you're not. She's not going to push it any further. And he will also know that, for example, okay, I feel like flirted. I feel like I'm flirting, right? So he'll sit down, relax, and say, okay, I understand your point, but let me just take it easy right now, I'll talk about it tomorrow. Right? Both will deal with that issue in a different manner. This is often overlooked. They make it a case of ego. The case of, you know, like, she is this and I am that. And there are many other issues involved. Emotional history, dreams of a person, all of that generally are ignored. People don't know, men and women. For example, after 50 years of living together, sometimes, oh, I never knew you, for example, wanted to go out, do travel, or you wanted to build a house like that, or you wanted to, for example, learn this skill, or you wanted, oh, I never knew this. That's strange. After so many years of living together, you still don't know, for example, what the other person likes or dislikes. But that's why you're having so many problems. Because the time when you should have been spent knowing each other was spent in other distractions. Now you're best. So anytime, any point in marriage, if this exercise is done, just knowing each other and their dreams and, you know, their history and their dreams would help. From that day onward, it will help. Right? And that because that would help both understand that this is not about him or me. It's just the way things are. And you come to terms with some reality. And also, for example, know that, for example, it'll give you more appreciation of, for example, oh, so this person, you know, this is how this person really is. I never knew. Or like if someone has been through something and you don't fully appreciate it, you may be blaming that person. Why you talk to me like this? Why you always bring stuff like that up? You know, why do you do this? But knowing better about the person would help you understand, oh, it's that's why these things bother you so much. Because something has happened 20 years ago which, you know, you never knew about. These are things about marriage that, you know, just like people do team building exercises, team building, like this camp is being organized coming soon, you know. This is a great opportunity, people to just spend good quality time together. Getting away from the, you know, the routine of the day and the stress of the work and everything, just spending good time. Just like a husband and wife should, on a routine basis, sometimes spend some just good quality time together where they just have some positive experience. And you don't use that for debating. You just use that experience, that time together, just to enjoy. Just to, for example, build that relationship. That's it. That good feeling about marriage you'll need, it'll help you deal with those all other things that pose a challenge, right? So this is like a list of things, but inshallah we'll discuss this further. If there are any particular questions right now, I'll be glad to address. Bismillah. Would expect sisters to say something. We could have shed some light on what they do and what they don't.
Sometimes you do take the initiative to talk to the husband, but they shut the door. In that case, what are you?
It is possible. Did you hear the question? Can you repeat? Sometimes, like.
Yeah, sometimes the women do take the initiative to solve the problem and talk, but the husband, they do not have time or they do not have any skills to talk, and that chapter is always closed. And next time you try to take the initiative, and that's a fight or argument. So what, in that case, what the women are supposed to do with it?
Well, one thing that is possible, that in the past probably that issue has become bone of contention. It's not just any subject, like talking about some storm or some weather or something. No, it's something that possibly in the past has been a problem. So whenever that issue comes up, it's like fear and all of that involved, and I don't want to get into that again. So you keep brushing that under, pushing that under the carpet, and that just keeps on, and it becomes a bigger problem rather than it just becomes a problem. So there are times when you just need counseling. There are times when you need counseling. Unfortunately, in an immigrant community, in American community, there is a lot more awareness about counseling. In our immigrant community, generally, there's not much, information about counseling in other countries, Asian countries, all of that, People just handle things, probably sometimes all other relatives get involved and they help, they try to help, sometimes they make it worse, sometimes whatever, So they just, the way things are, And as nobody has the statistics really, the divorce rates in back home are really high. People, it's not any better than here. I mean, immigrants moving to this country, they have more stressors in their life than the local Americans. Because Americans they know the language, they know the culture, they live here, right? They have their occupations, they know how things work. Well, you come here from a different culture to learn a new language, get used to the customs, and so many things, work skills, work environments, the things you have to learn and master, and all of that stuff. It's not easy. So the factors affecting marriage, that adversely affect marriage, probably are more for the immigrants than the local. Although some of us say, they are into drugs and alcohol and all that. Possibly, maybe the divorce rate is a little bit higher in the American community. We don't have correct statistics. What really is the divorce rate? Divorce rate in the American community is probably around 34% of the marriages really end up in divorce. 28% people in this country are living as married couples. That's it. 28% are living as married couples. Well, half of the marriages sometimes just, you know, end in divorce, the separation. And who knows what the rate is for immigrants? Around the same, I think. Or I wouldn't be surprised if it's even higher than that. Although we are not all of us, many of us are not into drugs and alcohol and all of that. Most people hopefully are not. But those other stressors affect the marriage perhaps equally or even more in some ways. In immigrant communities, in refugees, what sort of traumatic experiences they have had in the past, that's going to affect their marriage right now. Physical well-being, what kind of sick, if they are sick or not, mental issues, you know, all of those other things, all of them are going to affect marriages here. And you have to know that, you know, seeking help is not a failure. But many of us think that, you know, if you seek help from a counselor or from a psychiatrist or something, that's like you are crazy or something. I've seen thousands of patients, you know, almost. And normal people, at some point they have some stress or some problem in adjusting to some new situation, either their physical health or because of some issue in the family, somebody died, lost their job, something happened, and they just want to talk to somebody. That's it. They don't think you're crazy. Nobody thinks anybody is crazy. And unfortunately, in many immigrant communities, if they ever go to counseling, it is when everything is already over. Now it's time for divorce, but they don't want to just keep on fighting every day and arguing. They want to go to a counselor and peacefully finish the marriage. Now they don't say, but it eventually comes to that. That's very sad. That's very sad, you know. Seeking help earlier gives you a bigger, greater chance of recovering from that. You know, because, you know, like two people, they're carrying a burden, right? Involving a person they trust, which is like neutral person, right? It takes, sheds off some of the burden to the third person. Both feel a little lighter. And the more help you seek, the greater are the chances of getting better. Well, inshallah. Allah, yes, last question. Do we have 2 minutes?
No.
Not even 2 minutes? This is such a subject, yes. Tell me a question, I'll answer tomorrow. Alright, later on. Thank you. Salawat.